5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
How on earth are people still dying on construction sites in WA in 2020? I think that's the question in Perth everyone is asking themselves this morning, following that horrific incident at Curtin University yesterday that saw 23-year-old apprentice glazier Johnny Hartshorn fall 20 metres to his death. Two others are still in hospital this morning fighting for their lives. And of course, a massive investigation is now underway involving WorkSafe and many from the construction industry out at the site this morning. Meanwhile, up in West Perth, in Parliament House, the Work Health and Safety Bill, which is basically a new raft of laws that will see industrial manslaughter laws in place, has been stalled in the upper house since February. For context, this bill was introduced last year in November. Amendments have been made, but debate, serendipitously, only started again on this bill yesterday. Industrial Relations Minister Bill Johnston is obviously incredibly fired up about this, given what's happened overnight. The Premier marked his condolences for all involved in Parliament yesterday, but I think Bill Johnston really summed it up perfectly. He said the death of one worker is one too many. So fingers crossed, with only 13 sitting days left in this Parliament before they break and it's dissolved before the election, the Legislative Council get this sorted and get this through. We've got a really big show today. We'll be speaking to a witness that was at the scene yesterday, who's also involved in the construction industry. And we'll also be joined by Regan Ballantyne. Her son, Wesley, died in horrifically similar circumstances just a few years ago. And she's been working really hard to lobby for these new industrial manslaughter laws behind the scenes for years now. We've got a big show, so let's get into it.
The West Live. The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858.
There's been yet another workplace tragedy in WA. Another person who left for work and never came home. Tributes are flowing for 23-year-old apprentice glazier Johnny Hartshorn after he fell more than 20 metres when a glass structure collapsed at Curtin University in Bentley yesterday. It's another tragedy many of us, including the unions, are saying should never have happened. They're now pushing harder for industrial manslaughter laws to pass through the WA Parliament. Dozens of workers at the site witnessed the traumatic event and have now been offered counselling. Electrical Trade Union representative Damien Clancy was at the site yesterday on a routine visit when the tragedy unfolded and was just metres from the horrific scene. Damien, thank you so very much for joining us. Firstly, how are you coping and how has this rocked the construction industry?
I'm going okay. It's interesting. It's not the first incident I've been a part of. I'm finding actually the more that I'm talking about it, the worse I'm actually starting to feel. I feel horrendous. I feel terrible for this young man's family. Yeah. I just can't imagine, as a father of two sons, having the police knock on my door to tell me that one of them, apprentice to trade, isn't coming home today. It's extremely disturbing. I count myself lucky that I didn't actually see the men fall. I saw the structure come down, but I didn't actually see any of the men come with it, thankfully. I saw one of them lying on the ground screaming. I couldn't see the deceased. Again, he was buried under steel, but from my vantage point, I couldn't see him. I couldn't get to them, which is something I'm struggling with, to be honest. There's a feeling of helplessness.
Yeah.
You want to render aid, but you can't rush into a structure that is potentially going to then collapse on you.
Yeah.
One of the men I spoke to in the aftermath, who was clearly shaken, told me that he had locked eyes with one of the men as he fell. So this, you know, and it was almost like a feeling that this man was looking at him, you know, desperate for help, and tears welled up in his eyes. And again, I count myself fortunate that I didn't actually see that, but it's a difficult situation to find yourself in, and especially knowing that someone has passed.
Indeed. And the fact that Johnny was only 23, like you say, it's just absolutely tragic. And how the bloody hell is this still happening in the construction industry in 2020? What needs to be done, do you think, Damien?
Oh, there's a raft of issues that need to be addressed. I mean, one of the most glaring issues is a report that was tabled in 2018 that the Morrison government still hasn't done anything in terms of acting on. Mm-hmm. There were 183 fatalities in 2019, workplace fatalities. That was up 38 more than there were in 2018. God. So that's a good question. How is it that we're regressing? How is it that Australian workplaces mm-hmm. are actually more unsafe now than they were 2 years ago? And I have some theories and some ideas on that. I mean, I visit construction sites on an almost daily basis, and in my opinion, the construction industry is in disarray. The material is cheaper, the time pressures are greater, the margins of profit are smaller, and they will always put profit above human life, in my experience. We have a visa system in this country where there are various disciplines on construction sites that are being undertaken by foreign workers who in many cases don't even speak English, so there's a safety issue there.
Yeah.
I've been on a job in Fremantle where some tilers from a foreign country decided to pull PowerPoints that were live off a wall to continue their tiling, and with having been clearly told that that area was live, they simply didn't understand the instruction.
Yeah.
You know, I could run through a raft of incidents that happened on one single job on Stirling Street in Northbridge last year.
God.
You know, and look, I accept that accidents do happen. There are things that are unforeseen, and it's not always a result of negligence. But in my experience, in the final wash up, you know, when we dissect these things, yeah, they are almost always preventable if things had been properly managed. And in terms of what happened at Curtin, I mean, the structure was standing for, I think, approximately 9 days. But the issues with the sag, if you will, or the mm-hmm. deflection in the steel had mm-hmm. been raised by multiple crews on multiple occasions, and they were simply told, it's all good, fellas, keep working. And look, if it had happened 5 minutes earlier, I think there would be several more fatalities. I know four members of the ETU were working in that immediate vicinity, probably up until 5 minutes. If it hadn't happened at lunch, there'd be several more fatalities. One of the men I spoke to had been under that structure probably 15 seconds prior. He walked in, grabbed his tape measure, walked out, and the building collapsed. And it's a terrible, terrible thing to have happened.
Absolutely. It's absolutely, it must be horrific for the entire industry. And it's just horrific to even just be talking about it today. You mentioned that there were structural issues, and the CFMEU have also said that there were reported structural issues with the materials. Who conducted these site tests, and who reported back saying it's all good, fellas, go back to work?
Oh, I couldn't give you anything factual on that. I'm talking, I suppose, anecdotally from I spoke to several of my members uh-huh. and fellas from other disciplines too. As I said, the young fellow who had been under the structure, you know, 10, 15 seconds prior to the collapse, he's not an electrician, but he came and spoke to me. I don't know who the engineering firm is. I don't know who surveyed the initial. My understanding is roughly half of the glass and steel was put on top of the structure, and it was then surveyed to ascertain the level of deflection in the steel and the amount of sag that had been allowed for in the engineering. Mm-hmm. And with roughly half the glass up there, it had already met that, or it had already reached that point.
Yeah.
It was surveyed, apparently, roughly a fortnight ago. And they said, no, we're willing to accept that. By the time all of the glass had been loaded onto the top of the structure, that tolerance had doubled. And again, anecdotally, I was told yesterday that the guys who were working on and under that structure were saying to management, listen, I can visually see a lag in the structure and it's moving. This is a problem. And it stood for 9 days, as I said. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't this have happened at midnight or at any other time during the day when there didn't happen to be three people on top of it? Mm. And look, again, I don't know that there were issues with the site in general, or if Lendlease ignored things, or, you know, ignored issues that were raised. I really couldn't comment on that.
Yeah, and I guess all of that will come out in an investigation. But yes, we're hearing that WorkSafe had gone through 200 incident reports since 2019 and says nothing has been raised over this site. Just about the organisation of WorkSafe, as someone that is not in the industry and has no experience in construction, I feel that the only time we hear from these people is when something goes dramatically wrong. Do you think that there needs to be some changes there to ensure that they're going on site, like yourself as union representatives, to ensure that all workers are safe before something catastrophic like we saw with poor Johnny happened yesterday?
Well, the reality is they're under-resourced, and it's only fairly recently that they've received additional resources, to be honest. I heard Darren Kavanagh speaking on ABC Radio earlier, and I'm sure he's doing the absolute best that he can. Mm-hmm. I can only speak to my experience. We often visit sites, and unfortunately, as union officials, we feel like we're the ones that are policing safety on sites. We take photographs, we do written reports when we conduct what's called a 49i, which is like a safety investigation, if you will.
Sure.
And in my experience, when we lodge these reports, we will generally receive nothing more than a receipt number from WorkSafe. We don't get a follow-up phone call. In fact, I rang one WorkSafe inspector who'll remain unnamed, and his question to me, his initial question was, how the hell did you get my phone number? When he realised I was a union official. I was on a job in Applecross where several local residents were complaining about traffic management, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when a member of the public called, they responded same day. It seems that when a union official calls, they're just simply not interested. But again, it's probably going to seem pretty harsh. I don't think Darren Kavanagh would appreciate me saying that, but that is our perception.
Mm-hmm.
When you send a written report with photographs of things that are clearly unsafe, and even especially in the aftermath, and we don't get any follow-up from WorkSafe whatsoever, they do seem to be struggling with whatever their workload is.
To take us back to when we first started chatting, Damien, about how you were saying that, you know, the materials are of a poorer quality and the profits are always going to be put over the personnel, what are your thoughts over this work health and safety bill that's currently stalled in the upper house at the WA Parliament? It's been there since February. What do you want to say to those MPs that are still wringing their hands over it may just be, you know, a full stop and things like that? Because don't you think it's time that we sort of followed suit like they have in Victoria, if there were some type of responsibility in place for organisations and management that would see, you know, financial burdens on them if these things did happen? Do you think that they just need to pull their finger out and just get this done?
Well, short answer, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Long answer, it's probably a lot more complicated. I can tell you that here in the West Australian, in terms of our legislation, there is a federal legislation, but it is then adopted specifically by each individual state. Now, we tried to put additional wording into our Western Australian legislation that would have beefed up parts of that legislation, and they were watered down courtesy of our Senate, who were lobbied by big business and employer bodies like the Master Builders Association.
Sure.
I mean, there are interests who do not want to see that level of liability aimed at them. It's that simple. And look, if I ran a construction company and someone were killed on my job, it's never cut and dried. You know, someone falls from a height, they investigate, you know, the person couldn't reach something, so they detach their harness. And this is a true story, but I won't go into too much detail. So effectively it was a case of, okay, well, that person is liable. They detached from their harness, they'd signed the relevant paperwork, they said they would adhere to all the safety standards, and they haven't. So what I've found, and even through my own personal experience in construction and offshore, you fill out a raft of paperwork that effectively covers the boss's ass, not yours, because you're saying, I've read and understood the instructions and I will adhere to all, you know, to all safety procedures. And then when something goes awry, they, you know, 9 times out of 10, they point the bone at you. So if I were a construction company owner and they were going to level millions of dollars worth of fines at me, you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm sitting up here in a boardroom. I'm making overarching decisions and I'm relying on people on the ground. I'm delegating responsibility to these people.
Mm.
How is it that I can personally be responsible? But it needs to be nuanced and it needs to be something with real teeth. So yes, they need to pull finger. And again, unfortunately, business and employer bodies have had their say. Mm-hmm. And if it was going to have any real teeth, to a degree, that has been watered down. Yeah. And it's a terrible shame.
What are your feelings like moving forward now? Because obviously the federal and the state government are focusing so strongly on the strength of the construction and home building industries to get us out of the COVID recession. There's only going to be more pressure to get people into apprenticeships in the industry. There's going to be more homes being built and more big, massive construction sites going up around Perth and WA. Are you worried for the safety of West Australian workers moving forward?
Absolutely. I worry about it every day. I mean, the level of supervision that young people in particular are receiving, we've got massive issues in our industry of the complete lack of supervision or under supervision of apprentices, for example. Mm. And that has now become law. There have to be a certain number of tradesmen to a certain number of apprentices. There's a ratio that must be adhered to. Mm. And I can tell you from personal experience, it simply doesn't happen. I hear stories of young boys on work experience with an electrical contractor, yeah, who wind up in hospital because they've been belted in the head with something or they've sliced their leg open. Yeah. They are effectively left to their own devices on a construction site and they have no experience in that environment. It's all time is money. The material is cheaper these days. The margins for the contractors and builders are smaller. There's just constant, perceived time pressure. Mm-hmm. If you'll allow me, I'll read a text message that I received from a friend of mine yesterday. We worked in construction together in the Northwest, mm-hmm, and he's done a lot of construction himself. And I just really think, I couldn't put it any more concisely than he has. Mm-hmm. Now, he was completely removed from this incident, but yeah, these are his words. He said, "This has knocked me around a bit, to be honest, Clance. All I ever used to hear on construction projects was, there's no money, there's no time, and, quote, you guys should have allowed for that. This young man has reaped seeds sown by others," and then several expletives. So, at the end of the day, he has hit the nail right on the head. And look, if I may take this opportunity also to extend the ETU and our members, extend our deepest condolences to the family, yeah, of the deceased. I mean, as I said, it's difficult to imagine that knock on the door from the police.
It's just, makes you, the hair stand up on the back of your neck, and fingers crossed we can all do what we can to ensure that this never happens again. But Damien Clancy from the ETU, you take care of yourself and all your charges out there. Thank you so very much for joining us on The West Live.
Thank you.
As we just heard, this latest tragedy has rocked the construction industry. Unfortunately, this is just the latest workplace death to impact our city. Another family is mourning the loss of their son, brother, and friend. My next guest, who knows too well the heartbreak of losing a loved one to a workplace incident, is Regan Ballantyne. She lost her beautiful 17-year-old son, Wesley, when he fell through a void in the roof of an internal atrium at the old GPO building in Forest Place in 2017. Regan, thank you so very much for joining me on what must be a really tough day for you, hearing all of the news that came out of Curtin University overnight. What needs to be done?
Good morning. First of all, my condolences to everyone who's been impacted by yesterday's incident. This has sent shockwaves through our entire state. Mm. There are people over east that have messaged me. It is a significant event, and it really highlights the need to improve how we value safety, that the priority that we put on safety, particularly in the construction industry, that industry is in absolute crisis. When you have an operator as good as Lendlease, I mean, they are very good operators. Mm. They value and care about safety. If there is an incident to this gravity on one of their sites, that just speaks even more to an industry that is in crisis. And really, what needs to be done? I mean, we have these new work health safety laws that are sitting in the parliament at the moment. Mm-hmm. That is an important facet, yeah, of improving what needs to be done, but it's a much broader issue, and really it is up to the industry to pull its socks up. Mm-hmm. It's up to the industry to do what needs to be done and clean up their act. And it's also up to each and every individual that's on a building site to take responsibility for their own safety. And I think the most important thing that needs to be done is that the government, when they are actually procuring large government projects, especially in light of all of the infrastructure work that's going to be coming up as a result of the economic stimulus, the state government needs to take the lead. The state government needs to be setting a benchmark of prioritising safety and having that as on the decision matrix, not just picking the cheapest contractor, picking, you know, the lowest price. And this is the historical track record of our state government in terms of picking contractors for, you know, multi-billion dollar contracts.
Yeah.
That's actually what needs to be done. Our state government needs to set the benchmark. They need to value safety and they need to start procuring on the basis of ethical contracting, ethical procurement, disbarring contractors that habitually perform poorly with safety performance, disbarring contractors that have a history of wage theft. This is what we actually need to see in terms of a long-standing and meaningful reform in the construction space.
Yeah. Regan, I know that, and I just spoke to Damien Clancy from the Electrical Workers Union, and we spoke about, I guess, the push now to have, you know, more young people be pushed into apprenticeships in the construction industry, that want to have more big, you know, massive big infrastructure projects to get our state out of recession and things like that. Do you think that, and on the flip side, the economic benefit is great, but do you think that going through COVID, as we have done in 2020, where the state government have put such a focus on the health and safety of West Australians, now is the time for them to lead by example to ensure that it's not just a, you know, a global pandemic you have to worry about, it's the everyday thing. So we have to make sure that we're ensuring workplace safety is of paramount importance, because if we're expecting young people between 14 and 35 to go and take up a trade, we want them to come home.
Oh, 100%. And young people are particularly vulnerable. Young people don't feel like they can speak up on a building site. Yes, it's your right to do so. Yes, you know, you can shut down a site if you see something that's not safe. You have those rights. Well, that's all well and good, but it's a hyper-masculine environment. Young people, young men are not going to speak up on a building site. And the benchmark to getting in onto a site is a 3-hour online white card. That's all you need to get onto a building site and work on a construction site. It is frightening.
Yeah.
I mean, in our advocacy group, there are 8 families and 4 of them are parents of young people who have lost their life under the age of 23. So, you know, young people out there that are listening, it is dangerous. Construction is dangerous. So, you know, it is incumbent on every individual to take care of their own safety. But I would implore the state government to look at creating another type of induction for all of these new young apprentices that are going to be coming online beyond the white card. We need some sort of incubation for these young workers before they go on to a building site.
Yeah. Regan, as we've spoken previously about your beautiful boy, Wesley, what was your first thought yesterday when you heard that another young man had passed away in similar circumstances?
Oh, I mean, it just shook me to the core, because, you know, it's all too familiar. This particular incident is all too familiar. The scene in terms of a young man falling through a glass atrium ceiling was, you know, very similar to the circumstances in which my son was killed, except that the builder on my son's site just absolutely didn't care about safety. That's a stark contrast. But it just makes me so angry but also determined, because 4 years later, another young man is falling to their death from a glass atrium ceiling.
Yeah.
4 years later, we know that falling from heights is the number one cause of death on a construction site. We know this.
Yeah.
So surely we would be taking or the construction industry would be taking every measure to ensure that those types of risks are mitigated. You know, and it just shows that my story of and Wesley's story, it's not unique. It's not special. It's not exceptional. These incidents happen every day. Well, not every day, but they happen
too frequently.
They happen far too often. Yeah. And the entire construction industry needs a spiritual awakening.
Absolutely. You've said it so perfectly. Listen, you are special, you are unique, and you're an extraordinary woman. Families Left Behind spokesperson, Regan Ballantyne. You take care. Thank you so very much for joining us on Cheers. The West Live.
All right, bye.
Coming up, our Crime Stoppers team will stop by to get your fix of how to catch some crooks.
The West Live. Making news.
Matt Tinney from Sunrise. It's a heavy, heavy, horrible day out there. We've been speaking all morning about this horrible ceiling collapse at Curtin Uni. What's the latest with the investigation?
Yeah, the focus has now turned to what happened, how it happened, why it happened, and WorkSafe is investigating this morning this collapse. We know, of course, 23-year-old apprentice was killed. He was on this 20-metre-high glass ceiling when it gave way. A 27-year-old man was also on that canopy. Right now, he's critical but stable in Royal Perth Hospital after undergoing surgery. A third man who was working lower down is also in Royal Perth Hospital. He's in a stable condition this morning.
God, it's just horrible. And I guess we'll see more of that news as it unfolds on thewest.com.au throughout the day and also on 7 News tonight. In some good news, there's a spudathon happening for telethon.
Yes, only 10 days to go until the all-new telethon, and Spud King Tony Galati is encouraging people to get in early with their donations. So today, the spudathon for telethon, say that 10 times fast, begins. And Tony Galati is offering a free 1 kilogram bag of spuds to Spudger customers who donate to Telethon in-store. So go in-store, donate, get your kilo free spuds and, you know, turn them into whatever tonight. Chips, mashed potatoes, the works.
Indeed.
So the spudathon runs all the way through to Telethon Sunday, which is October 25.
Brilliant. Matt Tinney from Sunrise, we'll see you on air tomorrow and then you'll join us in the West Live shortly after that. Thank you so very much. See you tomorrow.
Will do. Have a great day, Jenna.
Coming up, why a local craft brewer has brewed a drop in honour of the Premier. Ben O'Shea will share all shortly in the Wild West. I cannot believe Chief Crime Reporter of the West Australian Ben Harvey doesn't know the Blue Heelers soundtrack.
I do know Blue Heelers. I'm a great fan of Asian police drama series.
Good. Well, I know one man that did. Senior Constable Mick Slaughter from Crime Stoppers.
Hi, Jenna. How are you?
So nice to see you again.
Good to see you too.
How's things in the crime business this week?
There's always things happening, as we say, each and every fortnight. But, yeah. But we like to catch them as well, so that's why we're here.
Indeed. Let's start. What do we got today, fellas?
Well, as usual, man in Thornley gets asked for cigarettes, gets punched.
Again?
Yeah. Oh. I don't know if it's the same guy. He's got to start carrying a packet of cigarettes so he can actually give some away and stop getting punched. But take us through it, Nick.
Yeah, this one happened about 5:40 p.m. on Tuesday the 8th of September. The victim, a male age in his 20s, was at the skate park.
There you go.
Skate park.
In
his
50s. It's just all adding up.
Why are you getting all golden triangle? We don't like skate parks in our backyard right now.
Skate parks, nothing good comes out of a skate park.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
It keeps kids occupied, surely.
Indeed.
Yes, dealing meth.
Yeah, well, you got to keep the older guys out, maybe. But
yeah,
in this case, it's the old guy who, older guy,
yeah.
Was the victim. Yeah, older.
So, okay.
So, yeah, what happened, he was approached by another male. We believe his age in his late teens, maybe mid-teens at least. He's asked for a cigarette. And now the victim has actually said, mate, you look a little bit too young for smoking. So he said, I'm not going to give you one. So this young bloke took a bit of an exception to it. So he became agitated. The victim walked away and went to his car. We put his skateboard in the car. And as he's opening the door to get in, he's been punched from behind very forcibly. So he's hit the ground. And he's ended up with a fractured cheekbone, swelling and bruises, and he was unconscious. So fortunately, some bystanders came around and helped him, got an ambulance for him, and he was taken off to hospital to be treated.
There you go. That guy's life completely changed in the stroke of a fist.
What is it with people hitting from behind the play? Not okay.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, look, this guy has done the right thing. probably shouldn't have offered health advice in that environment, but anyway. But he has walked back to his car. He's removed himself from the situation. He made the mistake, though, of walking away with his back to the agitated teen at a skate park. I mean, if you see an agitated teen at a skate park, quite frankly, you start digging a hole and you can't climb
into
down.
It. Oh, that, so we've got some vision on the, of that and on your Facebook page and also on page 57 of today's West.
Yes, absolutely.
What else have we got?
We've also got a stealing. It's a pretty run-of-the-mill sort of stealing, but this one has two guys who are so clearly on CCTV. We've got, like, you could almost put them on the mantelpiece, and mum and dad would be proud of the photo, not to say.
These guys are going to have a bad
incident.
Day today.
A very bad, very bad. So it's going to go up on Facebook.
There are a couple of clean-cut looking roosters, who I think will last about 3 seconds in hay here on Roman. So, boys, bring your belt to bite down on.
Oh, stop it.
Maybe you should be a magistrate.
Yeah, could you imagine?
Being in remand on a stealing charge. That's excellent.
And they're from Bicton.
Bicton?
They're from Bicton.
Oh, yeah, they won't last a second.
We don't know if they're from Bicton.
but they were in Bicton.
They were in Bicton and they ran off and they may have gone to a house nearby. We just don't know. Yeah. So it happened about 3:40 p.m. on Saturday, 3rd of October. Two men entered the liquor store on Canning Highway in Bicton. They've approached a display of Jacks.
Daniels. Oh, yeah. A classic tale.
Yes.
The black rat.
Yes. So fortunately, they didn't steal any Coke as well. So there you go. So they're true drinkers. But they've selected two 700ml bottles each and run. Literally bolted out of the door.
Wow. Yes. Real Ronnie Big Spec sort of great train robbery planning in this one, isn't it?
Criminal masterminds.
Genius, yeah.
So, yeah, they've run down Canimbla Street towards Fremantle, and they may have run into a house around there. So if anyone knows those people, I'm sure once they're up on Facebook, they're on the Crime Stoppers website now, we need to know who they are.
Indeed.
Simple as that. So
I've got a question for you without notice, and I apologise.
Oh, great.
Are you looking forward to the day where technology becomes so great that CCTV is going to be like high def?
Yeah, well, it would be good, but you got to understand that anything that high a resolution needs storage, and that's the problem.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, they can do it for 5 minutes of the day, but the problem is the rest of the day would be pretty ordinary.
Yeah, okay. Jen still says the Google, so she doesn't understand that kind of stuff.
The internet has a lot of interesting things on it.
Now, this next one, look, this is bad. I have sympathy for this alleged criminal.
Jesus, it must be bad.
He's gone up to an ATM. In Rivervale. He says he's put his card in.
A likely
withdraw
story.
Cash.
Mm-hmm.
No cash comes out.
Also a likely story.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes it could. And then he's done the usual thing of just completely trashing the ATM while screaming loudly, which I've got to say is probably going to be my reaction if that ever happens to me.
Please don't use an ATM around where I live.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what happened, Mick?
Okay, this one, a guy used his ATM on Kooyong Road, Rivervale, about 8:45 p.m, Monday, 5th of October this time.
Mm-hmm.
At the completion of the transaction, or what we believe to be the end of the transaction, it appears as though he has lost his temper due to the cash not being dispersed.
Yep.
And he's began to kick and scream and pummel the screen, and he's ended up trying to pull the screen out, and the wires have been exposed and all sorts of stuff. So
he's
literally lost the plot.
That'd hurt. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Bare hands as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not great.
So
maybe he genuinely did, like, that kind of rage would suggest he should have had $50 coming out, and it didn't.
But also, you should have just checked your balance first, mate.
You know what is infuriating? If you go to an ATM and you think, oh, you know the ones that charge you $2 or whatever, and you go, I don't know if I've got enough money. And so you put your card in to check your account balance, and that charges you $2 just to check your account balance, and that $2 brings you under $20 to $18, so which means you can't withdraw $20.
Ben, settle down.
Sorry.
Do you have a mobile phone?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm telling you, back in the day.
Account balance on your mobile phone app.
Anyway, I'll use the Google for that.
Wind up your old Nokia 5210 there.
We're going to bypass this next one, the woman attacked for cash, because that's another ATM thing and it's just going to get my rage up. So let's go to another alcohol theft.
Yeah, well,
$180.
Yep.
And that's about the price of one bottle of wine for you, mate.
That's the price of two cases of wine for me, thank you.
Okay, well, this one happened at about 1:50 p.m. on Saturday, 3rd of October. Two women and a man entered a liquor store once again, but this time on Royal Street in East Perth. All three of them walked around the store.
Oh, I know that one.
Do you?
Vintage Cellars.
Shh.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Why can't we say that?
We don't.
What
allegedly.
Is with you guys, not saying
allegedly.
Vintage sellers.
Allegedly.
Just because?
We don't disclose the name of the business.
Why do you say decamped? Oh, why do you say male instead of man?
Oh, my God. I'm sorry that I've derailed this conversation. I'm very sorry. That's just the one I know. Continue.
Yes, okay. So all of them walked around the store, selected all these items, mm-hmm. including a case of beer, pre-mixed spirits, including peach iced tea with vodka.
Oh,
I've never heard of that before.
That's new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
the new push for the pre-mix. Seltzers, apparently, the new thing.
Oh, what is a hard seltzer? What is that?
Like soda water with booze in it.
Oh, right.
Okay. Let me check the Google.
But here's the real good part. Tawny port is also stolen. Now, I know Ben would be a drinker of that.
I am a grumpy old man with my tawny in winter.
With your cigar.
To open fire with my Great Dane at my...
with your smoking jacket, like your velvet smoking jacket.
Looking at the animal
jacket.
I just recently killed and hung over the fireplace.
I didn't know that you're a son of Trump.
Tawny port. Anyway.
Yes, and they've walked to the counter, as you do, mm-hmm. and then they've gone, kept walking. So they've not offered payment and they've not... answered any calls to say, come back and pay, please.
God. Why don't they ever steal rosé?
I don't know.
Or Merlot.
Oh,
you like a Merlot.
You know the quietest place on earth? The Merlot aisle at Dan Murphy's.
Really?
It's like tumbleweeds.
Well, it's too hot for Merlot here.
Yeah. And then we've got another one, in a bottle shop. Who would work in a bottle shop? These people need to get some kind of national day of recognition.
I agree.
From all kickboxing lessons.
From all the years I've been doing this Crime Stoppers position, the number of stealings and incidents that happen at liquor stores is astronomical. So,
wow. Yeah, do you think it's increasing?
Oh, well, I wouldn't say it's increasing. It's always been there because mm-hmm. people are so desperate for a drink, or some people, and they just help themselves, literally. So, yeah. The best part is the CCTV over the years has increased the quality enormously. So, we're now locking up more and more and more of them. So,
bonkers.
Keep going.
What happened in this latest one? This is in Balga.
This is a bit ironic.
Didn't say anything.
In Balga.
Balga's a great suburb. Come on, settle down, guys.
It's really thriving.
Yeah, the best thing to come out of Balga, Wanneroo Road.
Okay, well, this incident happened about 11:45 a.m. Once again, Saturday, 3rd of October. It must have been the day for crime.
Was that the long weekend?
I can't remember. I'm sorry. Public holidays, so it means nothing to me.
Oh, mate, preach.
A man and woman entered a liquor store on Princess Road in lovely Balga. The man appeared very agitated and acting aggressively towards the woman he was with. The man grabbed hold of a freezer door and started pulling on it and ripped it off its hinges.
Oh, my God.
Only in Balga.
This is like a superhuman criminal who's capable of tearing a fridge in half.
Yep, the Hulk. So he's done that, and then ironically he's punched the police anti-shoplifting sign several times. now here's the positive of this case. At no time was anything stolen from the shop, so I think the sign worked.
So, good job, cops. Yes,
is this the one where it's like the fake cop?
Mm. Yep.
Do you reckon he... We're so out of it.
Oh, no. Well, if he drips,
I'm about to get arrested.
So we're considering an assault police officer, but
do it.
Probably not worth the paper it's been printed on.
That is just unbelievable.
Wow.
So he's left the store and walked out. Now, we think he was with that female, but we've only released the image of the man, but keen to identify who he is. He's obviously got a little bit of an anger issue there, so... Mm-hmm.
And he looks scrawny too. So that's some.
Stay away from this guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Indeed. All right.
Okay.
Are we done?
We're done.
Yep.
Crime wrap for the week.
For the fortnight.
Yeah.
If anyone has any information, please contact Crime Stoppers about these cases. They'll be on the Facebook page and WA Police later today.
Or you can use the Google to locate them at Crime Stoppers
as well as WA.com.au.
All lowercase.
All lowercase.
And if you pick up the phone, your Telstra little prepaid phone, it's 1-800-333-000. Sydney Constable Mick Slaughter, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jenna.
Chief Reporter Ben Harvey, see you soon.
See you, Jenna.
Neds have jumped on board as a proud sponsor of The West Live, and we're ready to take it to the Neds level this spring racing carnival. If you don't know much about Neds, in a nutshell, it's where betting meets innovation and fun. Which makes sense. Well, they have just launched this great new product called Filterform to help you find your perfect match this spring. And it's available across all three racing codes. That's Thoroughbred, Harness, and Greyhound Racing. You can select from form preferences like one last race, your favourite jockey or trainer. You can even select an odds range, which is perfect for someone like me who wants to have a cheeky bet every now and then, but doesn't want to study the form guide too deeply. If only filter form was available in everyday life. We could choose it for deciding on what's for dinner, who should be my next guest on the show, or what we should watch on Netflix. I see Crown, the season 4, is out shortly, and that's what I'll be doing. Find your perfect match today and take it to the next level. But be sure to gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
The Wild West.
Ben O'Shea, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Was that Crime Stoppers or a stand-up comedy?
Oh, my God, how good are they? They are my favourite men, midweek men. I love it. So good.
I'm looking forward to them doing a duo show at the Comedy Lounge soon.
Indeed. I could get him on for Fringe. That would be fantastic. I love it. Yeah. Now, exactly. I'm very excited to hear, as I mentioned earlier in the show, there's been a new drop brewed in honour of Premier Mark McGowan. Tell us more.
Yeah, so the Beaten Track Brewery out in Kalgoorlie, which is actually a wonderful little craft brewery out there.
You are the craft brew connoisseur. I'm keen to hear more about this.
Yeah. Well, it is off the beaten track. It's sort of on the Boulder side of Kalgoorlie, tucked away. When I went to find it, I drove past it about 10 times, not even realizing there was a brewery there. but they punch above their weight, this business. I think it's a husband and wife team, or like, you know, couple team. Mm-hmm. And so they've wanted to brew a beer in honor of Mark McGowan to give him a bit of a chuckle. And so they've brewed a Hefeweizen, which is a German wheat beer for people who are into that sort of stuff. Hefe is what it's called for short. And so they've called this beer the Hard Border Hefe.
Okay. And so what is a Hefe? What are the notes of a Hefe?
Oh, so it's that kind of like that the classic, like let me think, it's like that Weisstaffener, like that German wheat beer, like that kind of a vibe, sort of a hazy.
Mate, I just had to Google drinkable. What a seltzer was. You're going to have to explain this to me like real layman's terms.
Well, the interesting thing about this is they did it really just as a bit of a joke for the locals who come in and have a beer there on the weekend. And so they only did a small 50-litre run of tinnies, which the beer caught on. And there was a picture of Mark McGowan holding up a 4-pack of it. And so that has just been instantly consumed. And now they're going to go back to the brewery and they're going to make a massive batch of it, which will be available to the general public in the near future.
Look forward to it. Now, further up north, the WA's northwest could be home to a new oyster fishery. This is kind of cool.
Yeah, exactly. So they've been talking about growing oysters for eating, not pearl oysters, which we know too pretty well up in that part of the world.
Indeed.
Yeah, so they've been talking about this for a while. They've trialled a few different species. It hasn't really gone anywhere, but now it looks like things are moving forward with a new black-lipped rock of oyster, which is, you know, like it's primo gourmet delicacy. And the Department of Primary Industries and Regional Development has actually been growing the little baby oysters in the marine shellfish hatchery at Hillary's.
Ah, how cool.
Yeah. So they're taking 30,000 of these little baby oysters, which I've learned are called spats.
That's cool.
So there you go, a spat. So they're taking these spats up to their new homes on West Lewis Island in the Dampier Archipelago off the coast of Cossack. And over the next 18 months, they're going to try and grow these, and hopefully then they'll be ready to eat. And it could be a you know, you're talking about a multi-million dollar new fishery if this comes off. So there's a lot of excitement around it and lots of jobs for locals, including local Indigenous people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. God, that would be – those black room oysters are delicious if you do enjoy a fresh oyster. Look forward to hearing more about that. Ben O'Shea, as always, such a pleasure to have you in the Wild West. We'll see you tomorrow.
Talk to you then.
That's it from me. Tune in at 8:45 tomorrow over on thewest.com.au/live and also on Perth Now. Or if you're on the internets, as Ben Harvey would say, at 12:30 today, you can catch a replay of today's episode or download the podcast wherever you get your favourite episodes. Have a lovely hump day. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.